Now, is there a link between climate change and health? What do warming global temperatures have to do with an increase in tuberculosis, HIV, or even cholera? Apparently, everything. So much so that the upcoming UN climate summit, COP28, which kicks off later this month, will for the first time introduce a day themed on the link between climate and health. Well, Dr. Jürgen Pillay, the Director for HIV and TB Delivery at the Bill and Melinda Gates Foundation, joins us to shed more light on this. Thank you so much for your time. I mean, it's all to do with how climate change creates economic disruption, instability, and ultimately poverty. Is it not, Dr. Pillay?
Bongani, good morning, and good morning to your listeners. Absolutely. Bongani, the first thing to say is that besides climate change, adds to the impact of pandemics, like the pandemic we just been through, COVID-19, the conflicts we have seen and we continue to see, plus the inequities. So these four challenges work together to impact on human health, plant health, and animal health. So there's no question about it. The WHO, for example, the World Health Organization, says that in the next 20 years, climate change will result in an additional 250,000 additional deaths every year from undernutrition, meaning lack of access to food, malaria because of the way in which climate change affects the movement of mosquitoes, diarrhea, and that's related also to cholera because of lack of water, lack of clean water, and heat stress. And you know who's going to be most affected? Countries in Africa, because countries in Africa are poor and are vulnerable and don't have the systems in place and unlikely to have the systems in place to mitigate the impact of climate change going forward.
I mean, so there are also other issues.
How does it affect these things, right?
No, I was going to say there are also other factors that can obviously exacerbate everything you've outlined because, of course, what that means often is that there'll be forced migration. You find that in certain places there's overcrowding as there's rapid urbanization as people try to run away from the impacts of climate change. The question then is the global health response to climate change adequate?
Not yet. Absolutely not yet, but we're getting there. So the first thing that we need to do is find, the evidence and document the evidence quite carefully about the pathways from climate change to these diseases and illnesses. So if you take TB, for example, what do we know? We know that the major risk factors for TB are undernutrition and poverty and malnutrition, overcrowding, and increases in diabetes as well as air pollution. Now, all of those things are affected by climate change. If you look at, for example, overcrowding, exactly what you said, if you look at the north of Africa, for example, you'll find the Sahara Desert is marching southwards, meaning that grazing lands, water is going to be scarce up there. People are going to be moving south. And as people move south, you're going to get a squeeze on land, squeeze on the natural resources, overcrowding, transmission of diseases like diarrhea, like cholera, like TB. And, with respect to HIV, the pathways to HIV are both on the immune compromise part of it, so that people get immune compromised because they are undernourished and they have other diseases and they're more likely to contract HIV. People get poorer. You'll get increase in sex work, for example, that's forced on people because of lack of any way of surviving economically. And then on the other side, you get the social disruptions that happen when communities are forced to live together in very crowded and economically unviable conditions.
How do we reimagine health services and provision in the context of climate change?
That's an excellent question. So, we need to figure out, firstly, how to make health facilities more resilient to climate. I was in Malawi a few months ago, and I saw the devastation caused by Cyclone Freddy on health services. So it disrupted health services by really destroying health facilities, clinics in particular, eroding roads. So roads are not possible for ambulances, for example. And then it caused the movement of people because, once areas are destroyed and livelihoods are destroyed and homes are destroyed, people had to relocate to other areas. and it put increased increased burden on existing health facilities outside of areas devastated by floods in the case of Cyclone Freddy. And then, of course, we need to inform our health workers about the impact of climate change. Heat stress, for example, has significant impact on pregnant women and infants, especially very young infants, you know, the ones that are between 0 and 28 days of age. And we find all kinds of impacts on the health of neonates as well as pregnant women during the course of pregnancy, increasing, for example, miscarriages in pregnant women, impacting on the health of the neonates, not only in the first 28 days of life, but there's evidence that it impacts on them throughout their lives. So it has near-term and long-term effects on pregnant women and infants as well.
It's a timely conversation, and I'm so glad COP28 is going to put a spotlight to it. Dr. Jürgen Pille is the Director for HIV and TB Delivery at the Bill and Melinda Gates Foundation.
702. Coming up, the big interview.
The big interview is, should prisoners have the right to have laptops in their cells? What does this mean as a security risk for society, or does their right to education override that consideration?